Welcome to the Quarantine Book Club, a comedy and book club podcast where we read some of the best
and worst
speculative fiction out there.
I'm Bob, a career theater technician and educator.
And I'm Rance, an English writing and literature teacher.
We might not know everything about these books,
but we'll damn well try.
And we're happy you can join us this week.
Make sure to visit us at www.thequarantinebookclub.com.
And check us out wherever you listen to great podcasts.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Rance.
I'm Rance.
I'm Bob.
And this is the Quarantine Book Club, and we have a guest with us tonight.
I'm Brian.
I was going to say, do we introduce you? Do you want to introduce yourself?
Brian who? Brian?
Brian Hodge.
Brian Hodge. Now, Brian, the first time that I ever, I think, sent you a message on Twitter or like tweeted you on Twitter, I called you Brian Hodges, and I apologize for that.
Yeah, you know, I've had worse. I went through half of high school with every official record and transcript. My first name was Brain. So,
Brain?
So, yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, one errant typo in the head office or something it infected everything. So a favorite teacher took it upon himself to try to, after about a year of this, he took it upon himself to try to get it corrected. And I think it was right before our high school graduation that he finally succeeded. So my diploma came out right.
Okay, so it didn't say Brain Hodge on it.
No.
That's it.
I mean, that would be pretty cool, honestly, if the rest of your life you were just the brain and you went through writing all of your books and there people were like, we got this new book from Brain Hodge. Yeah.
Well, you see how Brain ended up in Escape from New York, so I didn't like that.
Well, Brian, we wanted to invite you on because, and I know we talked about this before the podcast, but just to give everybody out there an idea, last season we read one of your, and I'm going to say it right because you get to totally make fun of me. I am such an asshat. One of your Nightmare on Elm Street short stories.
There's only the one.
There's only the one. Okay.
Yeah.
And not a Friday.
Not a Friday.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So when I emailed Brian to ask him to come on, I was so excited. And I said Friday the 13th. And he's like, hey. Just so you know, you got the right guy.
Well, you also are the first author that Rance has spoken to, I think, cordially and not attempted to fight. So there's that also.
I'm ready for either.
Okay. Well, as you are a man who knows martial arts, you know Krav Maga, is that correct?
13 years with time off for wounds, injuries, and tragedies.
That always happens, right? That's time to make yourself better in other ways though, isn't it?
Yeah.
And to work on fundamentals and to just, see what it is your body needs. So 13 years. Yeah. You destroy me.
Well, we can put it to the test.
Wow, this is the first time anyone's actually responded to Rance. Like, now Rance is like, I'm going to back off. I'm going to back off. I don't really want to fight.
No, I wouldn't, Brian, because you would. I think you would absolutely break me.
How many years have an Aikido?
Five.
Yeah, 5 years in Aikido. That's no joke.
It's not. And I'm lucky that like our Aikido, because I'm sure Brian has heard of it. Like Aikido has a very interesting reputation in the martial arts world. And a lot of the time, from my perspective, you get a lot of people who are like, oh, Aikido, that really doesn't do shit. And I'm really lucky that I come from a school where it is focused on, we do a lot of groundwork. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of circuit, like our teacher, she's like, look, I recognize that it's got a bad rap. But it's a martial art that is just as effective when applied in appropriate circumstances. And that's actually one of the things. So we're going to be talking about your book tonight, The Immaculate Void. Yeah. And I couldn't help but think about martial arts a whole bunch of the time that I was reading it. And I'll talk about why in a little bit.
That's an interesting take.
So we read The Immaculate Void. Brian, when did The Immaculate Void come out?
Let me...
Do you remember?
Yeah, it was like... let me look at the copyright page here because
you have one of those coveted paperback editions.
Yeah, it came out about 3 years ago.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, you have one of those coveted. You know how much do you
oh yeah, that was
one of those going for right now?
It came out the day it came out was the day I woke up to the news that my mom had died.
Oh, that's, I'm so sorry.
I don't know why I didn't remember that. Yeah. Right off the bat.
That means we lost our parents at not too far at the same time. We lost our father in January, 2018. And that's when Immaculate Void came out in March, 2018,
April.
Okay.
So it, I lost both of them at the same time.
Oh my gosh. I'm so sorry to hear that.
That is rough. That is really rough, man.
Yeah, so it's kind of like ripping the Band-Aid off all at once. So
true. I don't know what I'm gonna do when talking about voids. I mean, this is going way darker, deeper than we normally get to in the start. We're like, but I don't know what I'm gonna do when our mom passes, because I feel like there's talking about voids. There's this. I'm sure there's this void that's left when your parents are gone and you realize you don't have that person. Even as a man in my 40s, I still look to my mom sometimes for guidance and help. And, you know, that once that's gone, sure. You're truly, you know, you're on your own and you're swimming in the deep end by yourself forever at that point.
Yeah.
And that's kind of scary.
Well, I think with it comes to this book, if you don't mind me asking, Brian, you can absolutely say, you know, I don't want to talk about that, Rance. Is that something that flavors your perspective on this book that you wrote? Do you think about the Immaculate Void? Like, do you think about that, like that it was published, you know, on that day?
I actually I forgot about it until I looked that up, and then it was like, oh right, yeah. So it hasn't, because I'd kind of disassociated the two by now.
Cool.
Let's jump into talking a little bit about it. Before we do so though, Brian,
you gotta do here. You are jumping through format, bro. Cause you're really excited.
I know. I'm really excited. I'm sorry. I'm very excited. Bob, do you want to take it from here?
Okay. First, what, Brian, I know that you've got a container, which may just be water, but, what's everybody drinking tonight?
Water for me.
Cool. Rance?
I'm having a Corona.
Wow.
And I'm also having a Liquid Death sparkling water.
Oh, okay. Wait, is that alcoholic?
No, it's just sparkling water.
Why is it Liquid Death?
Because it's badass. And I mean, we are talking about a lot of, like, the Immaculate Void has a lot of dead things in it. Mm. So, I mean, I think it's fitting. But I mean, look, let me read this to you. Let me read this to you really quick. Let me read my water to you guys.
Man, I'm already bored.
No, listen. Look, it says this infinitely recycled.
I want to hear about this water.
Thank you so much, Brian. Brian, I'm actually going to kick Bob off the show if you want to be my new co-host, because I can't handle this bullshit. It says this infinitely recyclable can of stone cold sparkling water came straight from the Alps to murder your thirst. When a group of teenagers set off into the mountains for a weekend of drinking regular water in plastic bottles, they became haunted by an aluminum can of mountain water that was dead set on murdering their thirsts and recycling their souls. Once cracked open, no thirst is safe from Liquid Death. After ritually dismembering its thirst victims, this brutal can of water used the severed body parts of dead thirsts to build itself a flesh suit, which it used to disguise and get a job in marketing. But Liquid Death never took the job. It just murdered a bunch more thirsts instead. So you know what? Very fitting that I'm drinking this tonight. Okay, Bob?
Where do you come up with this shit? Where'd you find this water?
Sheets.
Really?
Yes.
What? Dang,
great,
dude.
It's great. It's great. What about you, Bob?
I'm drinking Sierra Nevada Little Big Thing IPA, which has a ABV of 9.0. So I can have one of these in a night before I start to get like stupid because I have a low tolerance. I'm drinking like Mountain Dew Zero and water. Like I got three drinks. I'm the win boy tonight.
Brian's the healthiest one out of all of us in that regard. Then, well, Brian, you had said too that you're a health nut. Like you love help taking care of yourself. I like as a martial artist. You know, a health aficionado. I think that's awesome. Bob and I are both people who try to be healthy. try.
I'm just one of those freaks that really loves to work out. So it's not like I've got to make myself go do this. It just happens.
But that's awesome. I mean, I enjoy working out, but then I also get into periods of time where life gets in the way. And so working out becomes a chore that I just can't get to. And that's actually more frustrating because I do enjoy working out in the periods of time when I can. Moving on real quick, because I do want to get to the book.
Finally, a book we can talk about.
Before that, though, I just want to ask how everybody's week was.
You know what? It was so good.
Good. Really?
Yeah. Awesome. I was off this week. Mm-hmm. Didn't have to teach.
Yeah.
Did some writing, did some plenty of reading. Brian, thankful again that your book is the thing that sort of broke me out of a little bit of a dry spell, because as Bob will tell you, I didn't finish the last two books that we read.
Yeah, I poked around on your your recent episode. They did not fare well.
They did not.
They were hot trash.
And you know, far be it from us, I think, to make those sweeping judgments. But I do think it's important, obviously, to point out those books that are awesome and that we enjoyed. And honestly, The Immaculate Void is one of those ones that steps outside of our wheelhouse a little bit. But other than that, like, having enjoyed reading, I spent some time with my wife. It is our anniversary today.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you. 7 years. 7 years.
Rance also got us embroiled in a Twitter fight.
I did?
Yeah, you did.
How did I get us embroiled in a Twitter fight?
Dude.
Oh, by that guy?
Yeah.
Oh, he's blocked.
We got attacked. We literally got called racists, KKK affiliated. All sorts of off the wall stuff that, like, if you do 2 minutes worth of research, it was weird.
Yeah, that seems antithetical to the impression that I've gotten.
we hurt some feelings because we made some comments about progressive writing styles and the idea that as a white person, you shouldn't be trying to tell the story of people of color and expect that, those people are going to respect the words that you're using. And then there was, like, making sweeping judgments about, what was it? It was comic book art. It started with comic book art
by indigenous artists is bad art. That was what this person said. I was like, what? Oh, yeah. What? Okay. So that was the week. That was what I did with my vacation. Bob, what about you?
That was it, man. I'm still looking for a house. I have my second COVID shot tomorrow. So I said COVID vax shot.
Thursday for me.
Oh, congratulations, dude. Yeah.
Drink a lot.
If you don't mind me asking, are you a Moderna or a Pfizer guy?
Team Pfizer.
Yeah,
yes.
Baby.
I had no choice in it. But
yeah. Yes, of course. I've heard that it's a little bit easier as far as the side effects and the sickness afterwards than the Moderna. Our mom got Pfizer. She's in her mid to late 70s, and she
crushed it. She's fine.
Yeah.
It was like, here I am a day at home, like, and she's like, you serious right now?
I took off work like a big old baby, a big old preventative baby.
Yeah, it's funny. I did some training this weekend under one of the main instructors at my Krav school, and he's also a SWAT trainer, and big guy. I used to think of him as the drill instructor before I really knew his background, and does have a military background. Just a rock of a guy. And he was talking about how he ended up like shivering under a blanket for about the next 8 to 10 hours, his dad was fine.
That seems like, hey, you know, dads are always tough like that. They're always tougher. Like, I'm all, you know.
So. Yeah, I mean, how many times did your dad beat the crap out of us? Our dad, I should say, our dad beat the crap out of us.
I got punched in the chest one time for saying, I did tell him, fuck you, old man.
He said, fuck you, old man, yeah.
That's not going to go over well.
It didn't. No. And you know what, Brian? I said it in front of him. I mouthed it in front of a mirror. In front of a mirror, and he turned around. He was in the military for 21 years, and he turns around and goes, did you just say, fuck you, old man, to me? And I was like, Next thing you know, just four knuckles straight to the chest, which I deserved it. I deserved it.
I mean, I don't know if you deserve immediate violence based on the fact that you said, fuck you. I mean, he was an old school, you know, military dad and believed in heavy discipline, but like, I don't know that swift and decisive violence was what you probably needed at the moment.
Hey, you know what? Maybe- he disrupted the potential threat in that moment, which was me. And he took away my will to fight. So
pattern, you know, interrupt. It worked.
It worked. It absolutely worked. Brian, how about you? How was your week? What'd you get up to?
Pretty much the same as all the 52 weeks before it. No, the big thing was all the training I did on Saturday. So,
was that like a longer seminar, or is that a normal, like, do you normally do?
I normally go in for 2 hours on Saturday to first a fitness class, and this week it was mainly heavy bag and kettlebell, and then an hour of Krav, then an hour of breakfast burrito, and then came back for a 5 hour a special opt-in firearms training thing. I did one about 3 weeks ago.
So is that if you don't mind me asking, is that like disarming firearms, or is that like using firearms?
Both.
Both. Okay. Oh, cool. Gotcha.
Yeah. Both. But it was primarily using one. That's why I thought to break out the light here, the strobe light. one of the drills was clearing a series of darkened rooms.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you find that this translates really well over into your writing?
It does at times. Yeah. I think that it's given me a new perspective on violence and on what the human body and mind are capable of. I mean, it probably also filters in ways that I'm not even necessarily aware of. Mm-hmm. Just because everything comes in, it's ore, it's raw material. So I don't think that it would be realistic to think that it doesn't filter in a lot of ways that I'm not aware of.
Sure, sure. Brian, I noticed behind you, and people who are listening to this can't see it, and that's A-okay because I'm going to describe it. But you are a man after my own heart in a number of ways. One, martial arts. Two, keyboards.
Yep.
I am a former keyboardist for a band. Bob and I had a band while back. And
it was bad. Don't look for it. Don't think about it. Just pretend like he didn't say that sentence.
Yeah.
Wild Stallions, was that?
Oh, it was about that. Okay. It was, I would say, Wild Stallions eventually ends up popular. We didn't.
We didn't. We were an industrial band.
I love industrial.
It was like KMFDM-esque. Old Ministry. Kind of.
Love them.
In fact, when we were reading your Nightmare on Elm Street book, you had references to bands in there, and I was yeah, baby, this guy knows what he's talking about.
Yep.
A friend on Facebook and I were just reminiscing about old Skinny Puppy shows.
I never saw Skinny Puppy in any regard. When was the last time they did a show? Like, what was if you guys remember, because I honestly don't. Like, when was the last time Skinny Puppy did anything live? Have they like changed the lineup and like continued going, or is there a point at which they said, nope, no more?
Well, nobody's been touring really lately, but it's been a few years since they did, it's Kevin and Ogre. And then, I'm not sure about the continuity of the guys that they have to fill it out.
Me neither. So you have back there, is that a Moog?
I've got one you can't see. Okay. Top one, that's an Arteria Matrix Brute.
Okay, and what do you got underneath that?
Underneath that is a Roland JP8000.
Holy crap, and the one underneath that?
And, well, this is just a Yamaha controller, 88 key controller.
And you've got a whole, rack system set up, too, for your synths.
Yeah, yeah. That's mostly just outboard gear. There's some sound generating. There's an old EMU sampler in there and a Roland XB-1580.
Yes.
But the other Rolands are are elsewhere. A Moog grandmother is elsewhere that you can't see. So there's a lot of stuff here that you can't see.
So are you a live performer? Do you write music? Do you perform? If you don't mind me asking, I mean,
I don't perform. I've not performed live really in any capacity, at least not for a long time. And that was just really kind of a backing capacity.
It's really cool.
I did one time I got a wild hair and did a soundtrack to an earlier novella
one of your own.
Yeah.
I love that. I mean, we listen to music so often when we're writing or reading. Music sets the mood so much.
I'll send you a link to that then.
I would love to.
For whom the gods would destroy. It's what I did it for.
I would love to hear that. Thank you, Brian. Yeah. That's really awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that only, you know, it's not too often that you get a chance to talk with other, and I'm so far out of playing keyboard. Like it's been years. I grew up as a pianist. And it's been years. Penis. I so did. It's been years since I've actually like sat down and written music. So it always makes me happy to see something like that. Brings back a lot of good memories for me.
Cool.
All right, Bob, what are we on to next?
Well, I think we can actually talk about the book, which I am super, super happy about. Give me one second. I'm just going to do something real quick.
Okay.
Rance, you go ahead and take over for a second. No, it's fine. It's nothing weird. I'm literally turning my hat around so that people can see my face and my expressions as I'm talking. I realize that I'm in the dark, kind of.
I thought those three beverages were catching up with you.
It would only take one in that case, I imagine. Just one.
I already missed whatever awesomeness that was, and that's cool.
So to give an idea, Brian, as to why we picked The Immaculate Void, there was no rhyme or reason. We wanted to read something by you that was fairly recent and that also played a little bit with the sense of time, perception of time. As we got further and further into The Immaculate Void, it was way bigger and way more cosmic horror than I think either Bob or I even expected. Mm-hmm. But again, it fit the theme of the month, because next book we're reading is Recursion, which deals a lot with time. So Bob and I both loved The Immaculate Void.
Good to hear.
It absolutely loved. It was a crisp. We both listened to it on the audiobook because it's hard to come by a paperback now.
You can't get it retail except for that audio version.
Yeah, and the audio version we listened to, we got on Audible, and it comes in at a crisp like 6 hours, which is honestly really great because so much of the stuff that we read comes in at 11 or 12 hours. And in 2 weeks, that can be a little exhausting to get through.
Yeah.
So the story, as far as I'm going to do my best to summarize it, Brian, you can tell me if I get it right or wrong. Bob, you can tell me if I get it right or wrong. And Bob, you can give it a shot maybe.
I mean, I'm excited to hear you describe it. Because it was actually very a mind blowing sort of trip for me, and I spent I got done it like 3 or 4 days ago, mm-hmm. and I think on Friday, and I'm still like was still processing some of the stuff that the ending of the book, and I think I even tweeted the other day that I just thought that without spoiling anything, that I thought that what you did took a lot of stomach at the end of the book, the way the book itself ended. And I didn't think that you were going to go where you went in some of the places, and you just did. And like that, that fearlessness was awesome, because we've been so used to reading books that are not,
hesitant.
Yeah. That are very hesitant about the wrong stuff. And this book was fearless in so many of the right ways that it was compelling the whole time. And the ending, I'll let Rance get back to it. My description in discussing it with someone that I don't think was Rance, I think maybe it was even our mom. It was galactic in scope, but intimate in the way that you related to it.
That was exactly the intention.
Awesome. That's all. Yeah.
And that came across a large sprawling universe of possibility and potential that you saw affect the tiniest scale,
right?
And the way that humans are interacting and perceiving these powers well beyond them. You know, we're dealing with Daphne, with Tanner, with Attila, who I have some thoughts about Attila that I can't wait to talk about.
Oh, okay.
The way that powers well beyond our comprehension affect the human psyche and affect the way that humans interact with each other. It's like Crash with cosmic horror. The movie Crash.
Ballard?
Oh, I was thinking the movie Crash in 2004. It was this movie came out. Bob hates it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm sitting here just squinting at you.
Well, the Best Picture winner? Or
yes,
the
yes, yes. Oh, okay. No,
I
not
didn't
the...
like. I didn't like it either. I thought it was very.
it's very treacly.
I thought it was very shrill.
What a good word.
They were trying to tell me a lot of lessons, and I didn't want to listen to the lessons. I was just like, I just want a movie. I'm also a guy who doesn't. I'm not into movies that are a ton of heart and trying to tell me a ton of stuff. I'm just not that guy anymore. I'm like, come on, I want to sit down, eat some popcorn, and watch some stupid idiots punch each other.
You don't want the didactic experience. You just want entertainment.
Whereas my books, I actually do find that I want an intellectual. I want to have a conversation with the book as I'm reading it, you know, in my head. I want to know that the author is giving me the gift of something to think about, because I think that's where I do my intellectual work, is in my reading.
Okay.
So Bob, you were going to say something about the book. I was just, honestly, it was just a summarization humans.
No, give the summary, because I bash right into your summary.
Humans being influenced by powers they cannot perceive, and sort of how it destroys them in the process, and how they come to destroy one another.
It's a story of a family, a brother and sister who come to terms with their past in finding who they are and realizing who they are to each other and who they are in kind of like the greater cosmic sense of things as well.
So what was the, if it's okay to ask, Brian, what was the seed of this book? Like, was there a specific moment where you were like, got this idea in my head and I'm going to go with it? Because there are a number of threads that are so disparate at the beginning of this novel. And there's one of my favorite things about it is the tension that you foment throughout the course of it. Just when a character is about to perform an act or experience something that is life-changing, you switch to another narrative between Daphne, between Tanner. And I'm specifically remembering there's a moment in the book with Daphne and Bianca going on a trip. And Tanner and his friend Sean are going to encounter this man named Attila. And these two narratives are happening separately. And every time something is about to happen, you cut away to the other side.
Yeah, well, that's just manipulation.
Love it. Love it. Yeah, but, so what was the seed of this?
I mentioned that the 13 years of Krav with time off for wounds, injuries, and tragedies. This was time off for an injury. I had shredded my knee and had to have surgery to put it back together. So I was sidelined, and had just done a deal with the publisher of this to do a story collection, which ended up being called Skidding into Oblivion. But as the contract and the deal, it was just for one book, and I had, and so this is an accidental novel. What I was going to do in the collection is predominantly cosmic, not exclusively, but predominantly cosmic horror. I was going to return to a tactic that I used with my first two collections, in which I collected these stories that were thematically similar. Usually, hey, I'm going to turn my light on here. This is starting to fade out on you as the sun goes down. What I had done for these first two collections was to collect these thematically similar stories and then write a new novella that encapsulated a lot of the foregoing themes in new ways. And so I started this thinking that it was going to be the final portion of a story collection, final novella. And then I lost control of it. So and I turned it in, and the way I've described it elsewhere is that what I turned in was a story collection with a novel bolted onto the end of it. And it was, nothing is lopsided in quite the same way as that is. So we ended up splitting it apart so it could stand on its own, and the story collection could be its own thing too. But so while I was thinking of how to end this thing, not realizing really what I was going to be letting myself in for and what all was going to spin off from it, I was just thinking of the foregoing themes of some of the previous, the story's previous collection, or the collection's previous stories, and wondering how to kind of re-encapsulate some of these cosmic themes. I was just sitting there doing a lot of sitting around because I just come out of the surgery. So it was a long immobile summer. So I was just kind of casting a wide net and trawling for different ideas and seeds of things that I could develop. And it was a while, I didn't even remember this until I went through the book again today. Oh yeah, that's where it really started to gel. I don't even remember where I ran across it, but it was it was one of those backmasking things involving Led Zeppelin. Mm-hmm. And of course, everybody knows the one about here's to my sweet Satan, and that one. Yeah. The one that I ran across that I'd never heard before was there was a little tool shed where he made us suffer. I'd never heard of that one. That somebody supposedly picked that up in playing something of theirs backwards, and I thought, there was just something about that stuck in my filters, that it was really a resonant line. And I thought, okay, this could be so going back to what your take on it, these cosmic things starting from very small beginnings, that was exactly it. It was using this tool shed as the springboard into the way the universe works, basically. And so it all just really unfurled from there. So there's the seed.
The tool shed is this. This did occur to me as I was reading it. And I have to 100% admit, Bob can vouch for me and probably also tell me I'm an idiot. I am not often a horror reader. My real experience with horror is the most terrifying thing I ever read was Pet Sematary when I was in seventh grade by Stephen King. And then after that, I was like, you know what?
That's a rough one.
It's terrifying. So this was sort of my chance to get back into horror. And I was thinking about the tool shed motif in this and in other works. You know, we see a shed in Evil Dead, the movie. Even in something is the shed, these small wooden enclosures, even in more recent things like Stranger Things. I'm trying to think of what else popped into my head that I had remembered seeing that I was like, oh, horror, shed, horror.
Cabin Fever has some weird shed stuff in it, because Cabin Fever is one that for some reason, it's not a great movie, but it sticks in my head. Yeah, like there's what's the Stephen King that is the house? Is that Rose Red? Was just a TV show. I don't think it was a book. There's some stuff like the shed is a big deal in that. Sorry. So
just the idea like the shed is this really super claustrophobic enclosed space. And obviously in this book, we have characters who experience horrendous things, but also that it's like this conduit for these greater and more horrific powers as well.
Right.
I always love knowing like in that moment, what's that thing that makes you go, holy shit, this is going to be a whole book.
Is the Immaculate Void its own universe, or do you have other works that take place in the same world and like concept and that like meet in the same the same place at the end, or is that like a one and done for you?
It's standalone.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And that's awesome, because that's another thing that is, frankly, as a writer, I think nowadays really brave too. Everybody's writing for a series, and you know, everybody wants that series to go on and on. And this is like, as a person who is a cinemaphile, I think a little bit, like, I hold movies like E.T. up as the first modern movie where you look at it and you say, this movie is better not having a sequel. And so many people ask for sequels for movies that it always surprised me that in that era, E.T. didn't get a sequel, that Spielberg said, no, that's it. And, but like, that in books now, people, when we talked to the Premium Muhammad, she said that people are constantly trying to sell trilogies, that when you're going to through your agent, you're going to just like, it's outselling trilogies nowadays in the modern market. And to see that that's not a thing, especially with this book, makes it to me an interesting and unique thing, because that's another thing I think Rance and I have done a lot in the show, is read books that are parts of series. And it's almost like it's so hard in our genre to find things that aren't interconnected universes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It also seems exhausting to want to read all those. Are you proud of the fact that you managed to smash massive celestial implications into a single book?
I'm happy with the way it turned out. I mean, it did what I wanted to do, and did it at a fairly pretty economical length. Because I never set out to write a novel. It just slipped the leash, and that's what I ended up with.
Are there moments that you wrote in the book where you look back on it or think back on it and you're like, holy shit, man, I wrote a thing that maybe like a person shouldn't be writing about here, as far as like and it's some of the fates of some of the characters, specifically the very first guy,
Val.
Yeah. like your description of what happens to Val and some of the stuff, again, I'm trying not to like spoiler too much, one of your other characters later in the book, that they have a similar fate. When you talk about like the eyeballs, that me out so bad, man.
I looked at Bob. We were over my mom's place on Saturday, and I looked over at him and I was like, I can never see a Samsung Galaxy in the same way ever again. and I put my phone up to my mouth and act like I was smashing it in there. This book goes from zero to 100 in it's a slow burn for the first, I'm going to say it's 15 minutes, right?
Yeah.
Of audiobook.
Of like listening. If even that, though,
and
I think.
Then it gets into just, oh, Val is actively falling apart in front of our eyes. Like the bruise, the minute that Tanner mentions seeing this bruise blossom on this man's neck, it's like, oh, something's going on here. Were there any parts of writing this, Brian, that you were particularly happy with? Like when you're writing it, you were like, oh fuck yes, this is badass.
Well, I think that what you're even referring to early on, that surprised me. I didn't know it was going to go there. Awesome. The thing that I think you're probably referring to later, when Tanner and Sean go see Attila. Mm-hmm. I didn't know it was going to go that direction.
Love it.
Okay.
So then you just, you let the characters end up speaking for you and they go through these circumstances and all of a sudden you're writing something you didn't expect.
Yeah. It's like, when you know the characters so well, I a long time has passed since I started thinking in terms of just trusting the process. Mm-hmm. It's like you throw yourself into it wholeheartedly and, somehow your previous choices end up informing your later choices to the point that they're not even really choices anymore. It's just everything that you've set in motion and you're keeping on track with it. You know, I've likened it to having a team meeting with the characters every day when you sit down. It's like, well, what's everybody up to today?
Ryan, that didn't.
I can get on board with that. Let's go.
That didn't break my email rule, did it? I didn't ask you about the writing process, and you were like, "Fuck, I don't want to talk about this."
No.
Okay, just making sure that you're not going to
No.
Oh shit,
Brian wants to hang out and have fun, and here you are asking deep, dumb bullshit questions. I'm not here for it. I don't want to talk about the writing process. I want to talk about. I only want to talk about Krav Maga. I want to talk about badass stuff. I want to talk about these guns, shooting at stuff.
There's a shit ton of badass stuff in this book.
There is. Tanner's a badass, like a rescue. He's a rescue professional.
Yeah, Rocky Mountain Rescue. Also, rescue.
And also, Brian, is this stuff, knowing that you're out, because you're out in Colorado, right?
Right.
Yeah. So this is your home, like stomping ground, where the book takes place. Mm-hmm. So do you have personal experience in rescue and things like that?
No.
Okay.
There is a moment early in the book that I loved, where I said earlier that it really reminded me of martial arts and specifically my own knowledge of Aikido, mm-hmm. Where Tanner mentions in his inner monologue, and I have to apologize because I don't have a physical copy of the book. He mentions that people in moments of panic respond to they react at the lowest level of their training. Mm-hmm. So everything goes back to training.
Yeah.
And that Tanner is somebody who obviously has, he's a well-meaning young man who's looking after his sister, Daphne, she has experienced something far beyond what anybody in the world should ever experience.
And it's his fault.
Yeah. And it's, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I also want to give you kudos, Brian, personally. You don't need your kudos from me. You've been writing as a professional for years, right?
I'll take them.
Okay, cool.
Thank you. It's always nice to have a little pat on the back.
Bro. I am personally always really uncomfortable and sometimes really turned off by sexual violence. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I really appreciate about your book is that the experiences that these characters, specifically Daphne, go through that are that kind of violence, they are never described with any kind of like joy in describing them. They're simply stated, mm-hmm. especially from Daphne's perspective, where she's like talking about like sort of what she's thinking when it happened, and is written with the utmost respect to that kind of trauma. And I really appreciated that as a reader, knowing that you're a horror writer at the same time. And horror writers love punching our guts. They love hitting us in these places that make us uncomfortable. And I was made deeply uncomfortable by it, but I didn't feel like it was exploited. And I just wanted to thank you for that as a writer.
It's horror, but it's not like you're not pushing into like exploitation or like torture porn genres, and I appreciate that. I won't watch, like, I like horror movies. I won't watch torture porn movies. I don't like, mm-hmm. I'm not interested in shit like that. I mean, if people are, whatever, that's cool. It's not, I'm not judging. I, when I say I'm watching shit like that, I'm like, I'm just not there for it. It's, well,
her story is told, or her threads are told from her point of view. Mm-hmm. This is the first time I ever did anything where it alternates between third person and first person.
That seemed really, really challenging to do. And it was sometimes a little difficult in the audiobook to hear the distinctions between the two. But once we got into it, it was like, oh, okay, I know exactly where the switch is over.
Because that's where the reader really has, or the audio reader has to, I haven't heard the audiobook, so I don't know what that's like.
But wow. You don't obsessively go back and listen to your own audiobooks over and over, Brian?
Well, no, I didn't even know.
You don't put them on in the car and listen to them?
I didn't know about the audiobook for a long time.
Okay.
Have you gotten comments? Have you gotten comments from people about the audiobook?
Not really. Yeah, I'm trying to go back and remember if I have, but I don't think I have. So.
The guy who narrates it, and this is nothing dumping on him. He is a very clear reader. There are times where I'm a little confused because I'm like, wait, who is that? Other than when he's Attila, when he reads as Attila, he's got the Brooklyn accent in there and everything.
Oh, interesting.
We've been texting each other back and forth as Big Brother for like a week now, just like. every time one of us is like text each other.
What's up, big brother?
I think that there's some, in all honesty, and this is not the moment at which we're like, oh, Brian, fucking book sucks. No, like there are moments where I had difficulty telling the, when the story jumped between first and third person between Tanner and Daphne in the audiobook. And I think that's a direction and an editing issue. It's definitely not a writing issue. And I don't even think it was a narrating issue. I think it's like, it was so quick the way it's edited in the audiobook that you almost don't have that moment. And I don't know, because I didn't physically read the book, I don't know if you plow through or whether it's like a stop and a new paragraph or an end of a page break.
Oh yeah, it's very clear in the in the print edition. It's not a hard thing to follow at all, and just the toggling back and forth between their perspectives. So
keep your axes on the wall, Brian. Keep your axes on the wall.
So no, I mean it's cool. And again, I also listen to a lot of audio. I get through, I think, double audible a month.
Yeah. So I actually want to ask a few things just about like favorite sequences, things that really stood out. And Brian, I'm going to honestly ask like some of your favorite things to write. And at this point we are 40 minutes into this. So you know what, if somebody doesn't know that there was going to be spoilers, they've got it. They've got knowledge now. So if they didn't read the book from this point forward, I'm going to say, you know what? Read the damn book. Stop it right here and read it because it's great. Yeah. Because I want to talk about some of these things. and I want to come out and say one of my absolute favorite sequences in this book was the confrontation between Tanner and Sean, especially not just what happens with Tanner and Sean and Attila, but Tanner and Sean going up to Attila's place, these guys needing to sort of blow out this catharsis of supposed failure on the part of their rescue. And they're straight up going to either beat the living fuck out of or kill this dude. And that's
what I thought was going to happen.
There is this level of human truth to that scared the living shit out of me, Brian, because I'm reading this and thinking to myself, I can't see myself in that position, but I don't think Tanner and Sean ever could see themselves in that position either. And I also am not a rescue professional, so I don't know what the hell that feels like. And I loved that. God, that chilled me to the fucking core.
Yeah, that's where I thought it was going to go. And then Attila surprised me.
Man, it surprised me too. There was the moment at which... you know, you make the mention of the axes on the wall, and then you realize what's happening. And again, you had this moment of, okay, well, they're going to get into this fight and they're going to disarm him and it's going to be okay. Or, you know, they're going to come out on top, and fucking Sean gets slaughtered. And I was not ready for it, but I was here for it. You know, it happened. And I was like, I like Sean. You know, you gave Sean enough background that it's funny because you care about Tanner as a reader. And so because you care about Tanner, you begin to care about Sean and understand the closeness between Sean and Tanner. And so when Sean dies, it hurts because it's going to hurt for Tanner. And Tanner pushes it away because it's what he's got to do. And that's his everyday life of dealing with the trauma of working in rescue. Mm. But, you know, so he's got that ability, but also, you know, it hurts. Like,
Yeah. I mean, I love that character. I would have liked to have done more with him because he just had an interesting perspective on things when he was, or to me at least, yeah, when he was, when they're in the truck talking, you know, before they go up and they're just surveilling the place.
He feels like he's got his head on, he's screwed on way tighter than Tanner's. Way tighter. I mean, you know,
he's more laid back.
Yeah.
I patterned him after a, what is his name? Ben, It's somebody who's I watched a number of videos on him, Ben Greenberg or Ben Greenfield, something like that. Kind of a fitness and performance expert and a bit of a biohacker, but he just had he had this really amiable way of presenting these things that so I slightly borrowed his look, but it was really more of his attitude that I really liked. He's got a great book called Beyond Training. I just run across his videos at the right time and I kind of borrowed a bit of his persona.
Awesome. How much of your like characters do you think, I have this feeling that philosophy that most characters are based off of real people because, you know, that's how we learn as human beings about, you know, is that to write and to create characters is to observe the people around us and the people in the world. How close are some of the characters in this book to people you know, or is it very much like I'm cherry picking personality from these people that I've seen in the public?
Yeah, it's all of the above. It's okay. a mix and match of all of the above. I mean, Attila, as far as his not necessarily his way of thinking and life philosophy, but as far as his appearance, that was heavily adapted from Peter Steele of Type O Negative.
Oh, that makes sense. Wow.
Okay, so I was sitting
that makes
here.
Makes so much sense. Mm-hmm.
And the voice too.
Okay. So wow. See, now that you say that, and my stepkid would be super happy because they're really into learning the world of goth music right now. And so Peter Steele has become kind of a
fixture in the home.
Yeah. And I'm also at the same time, I'm a little bit like, you go kid. Cool. Yeah. But I kept saying for some reason in my head, he reminded me of Jason Momoa, like visually. So I see. And now that you say that,
Somebody suggested Jason Momoa when they found out it's being developed as a TV series.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's optional.
What? That's fantastic,
oh my
brother.
God, that's so great.
I was sitting there today. I took a walk and I'm thinking about it. And I was sort of going over because Brian, I don't do any kind of, I barely write things down. I'm an English teacher and I write down shit for work, but I don't write things down. I read for fun. I'm like going through my head and thinking of like, okay, questions. And I was literally thinking in my head the entire time, if The Immaculate Void was a movie or a like I could see it in a television set. That's really cool. I mean, obviously, you know, there are things about that you can speak about, you can't speak about. Mm. Is this the first time that something like that has occurred to you, or have you had other pieces that have been optioned for?
I've had things being optioned going way back, but nothing's ever been filmed or gotten very far in that process. But a number of things have come up lately. This one seems like, and you never count the thing, until it's done. But it was optioned first he was thinking of it as a movie, and then he and his producer have started thinking of it in terms of a limited series. But it was an Australian filmmaker who had Tony Dacchino is his name, and he had a festival hit with his first feature called The Furies. Which I thought was pretty interesting, and thought it added a lot to the it had a new wrinkle on the hunted humans humans hunted for sport.
Yeah. Okay.
And
he's a connoisseur of the great John Leguizamo film of 1999 called The Pest.
God, I hate you, man. I hate you so much. Is he going to scam simply because he can?
God, that movie is one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life. I'm saying
I forgot about that one. Yeah. I had to go back.
So Brian, a little known fact about Rance and I, we didn't really this year because, you know, again, COVID, We have had a long-standing tradition of getting together on Christmas Eve from when we used to live together in an apartment and watching, I'd say, the first 10 minutes of John Leguizamo's The Pest. Basically, through the opening song...
until the movie starts, then we're like, this is boring.
Yeah, and then once he gets through the opening song, we're both like, we try to watch it, and we just can't handle that trash. It's so bad. We've gotten all the way through it once. And then at the most, we get to the point where the dude from Ferris Bueller is introduced. And then we're like, nope, I can't. I can't do this anymore.
I've never seen it, so I don't know.
Don't watch it.
The references are all lost.
As far as humans hunting humans, it's way down at the bottom of that barrel. It's in the discount barrel of the humans hunting humans.
I wondered how we got here.
Imagine if The Most Dangerous Game starred a principal and an idiot, and that's The Pest.
Yep. John Leguizamo doing absolutely everything he could that is actually nowadays, and looking back on it, terribly offensive. just you look at it, you're like, oh man, at this.
But you know what, Leguizamo probably looks at it the same way too, though.
100%.
You know, that guy's pretty self-aware.
That's honestly really awesome though, Brian, to know that there are, that this could be translated into a visual sense in some capacity, I think is really, really cool. He loves
the axe scene. We talked about that.
Dude, that is a moment at which, you know, in thinking about it, because I was thinking about it in terms of a movie. Yeah, like in my head, I'm like, this would make a great movie. It's like the pacing is great. You know, it's got this rise and falling action, all this stuff that will work really well. But then you say it and like episodic, and to know that it'd be a limited series, it's also great because I don't want to see someone like with Altered Carbon. I don't know if you have watched that on Netflix.
I haven't yet. No. There's so much. You can't get to it all.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. And I love the original book series that Altered Carbon is based off of. But once the first series ends, the first book ends, and they go like they split so far out from the original book in the television series that it was like, how are you going to even do season two? Mm-hmm. Season two is nothing like the second book in the series. And so you're almost like, why bother? And it got canceled, which makes me sad for like Anthony Mackie, because I think he's a great actor and I think he does a great job in that show. But it's one of those things where I see it and I'm like, I can see this as long as they stick to that limited series and it ends when it ends. Mm-hmm. There's no way to go beyond it. In the book, there's no way to go beyond it.
Yeah. Yeah. Same with Void.
Yeah. And that's what I mean. I mean, like with Immaculate Void, once you get to the end of that book, that's the end. I mean, there's a conceptual continuation, you know, in your mind, the universe goes on, but those character stories are done. And I think that's specifically what I think I was like, that I have to praise you for, especially is the ending of the book saying, the world ends at the end of this book, you know, the world as we know it is over. And I didn't think it was going to go there. You know, I thought the characters were going to find some way to solve this problem, and they just don't. They just don't, and they sit down, they lie down, and they accept it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what other choice is there? I mean, to me, this was what I wanted it to be. Was on one level, I wanted it to be a cosmic horror story, but at the same time, I wanted it to also be a deconstruction of cosmic horror, in a sense, in that a lot of the tenets and philosophies that tend to go along with that, the people that espouse them are really unpleasant people, and this is a thread through a lot of stuff that I've done along these lines, in that what it comes down to is people making moral choices and finding their own meaning in things that other people might find terrible or find meaning in overall situations or lives that might be fun. They might consider as meaningless. So with this, it's like they continue to go on and just the fact of these moral choices that they make are still very important to them, even though even though in tomorrow it won't matter. But they're thinking, they've come to think of it on the same scale as the universe, the continuity of the universe, and that yeah, it matters. The choices now will continue to matter to them, you know, in perpetuity.
I think that's more honest to that. We're talking about the minuscule experience or the singular experience of the human in a great vast cosmic and celestial circumstance, mm-hmm. is that really we see so many books where these protagonists will surge beyond the challenge and they will meet it and they will succeed, even if it means clawing up that final hill by their fingernails. But the reality is we are going to just lay down. Like that's there's such a powerful relativity in that, because we're so accustomed to reading about and learning about heroes, and there really aren't any of this book. They're just normal ass people. And I actually had a question from a friend who had read this. Our friend Burgers, what's going on, Burgers? Could you say hi, Brian, to Burgers?
Hey, Burgers.
His name really is Burgers.
Yes.
And
he's Keith Burgers.
Keith Burgers. So he actually asked in here, he said, was the inclusion of Tanner's handicapped son just for the one scene where Attila brings him up? What was the, just out of curiosity, what was the purpose of him mentioning Tanner's handicapped son? Was that meant to highlight some aspect of Tanner that we didn't otherwise know about?
Well, it wasn't put in there to be exploited by Attila later, because mm-hmm. I didn't know that. Yeah, that scene was far away from even happening and unfolding. But no, it was just but I figured somebody would point it out, and it just happened to come out of Attila about the randomness of the universe, and you know, like the wrong gamma ray at the wrong time on the wrong chromosome can change a life and the lives of everyone around them. So again, it was just an early example of this random chaos that you have to deal with.
I thought about Tanner's son a bit in reading the book. If we had more time with the characters, do you think, and if you've even put thought to this, is there a suggestion, or could it be a thought at some point, that maybe Tanner's son is also an atavist, and that it's just, that's the effect that it has had on him as a person, and that maybe, you know, being that collection of those molecules, and that's the existence from a different time period coming back together, and that's what has affected him in that manner?
That's possible. I mean, I've always taken the attitude that once you finish something and release it into the world, there's a kind of a relinquishing of ownership, not in terms of intellectual property and all that, but just as far as the experience that people have with it. So it's like, I've seen people, you really nail things that it's like they aligned with the intentions that I had when I wrote something. And I've seen people just completely run in an opposite direction. And I'm wondering, well, where did that come from?
Right.
Yeah. But I would not want to be arrogant enough to tell them that they're wrong.
So what you're saying is that we're not going to get a special edition of you know, George Lucas style of the Immaculate Void, that you're actually not going to go back and rewrite parts of it with bad computer
generated characters. Hey, look, Tanner hacked first. Okay, Tanner hacked first.
Oh. So what you're saying is that Attila was just defending himself.
Well, as far as favorite characters go, I love Attila.
I did too.
Attila was this unknown quantity when he's at the very beginning of the book, we're hearing about Attila, and the name just stands out. And you're like, who the fuck is Attila? And then you meet him and he is both greater than and way less than I expected. And then when he starts talking about it, it's that sequence about gamma rays and chromosomes, talking about random chaos, where he talks specifically, the one line that stands out to my head is he talks about that gods are an idea of magnitude. Mm. And I was floored by that. This is the kind of book that someone who is constantly struggling with the idea of what a god is, or the relationship of God to humankind, can take from and go, holy shit, there are some things in here that I need to think about. Because when Attila says that, I'm like, all right, I'm getting this guy now. I'm understanding this, I'm trying to think the right, you know, Jonestown-esque, Branch Davidian-esque mindset. it's terrifying, but it's true. It really brings to light, I think, how difficult it is to understand celestial power as humans.
Well, I can't quote them verbatim, but so this is just the gist of what they were saying. That had a reaction early on to Attila. It was like, yeah, he's a terrible person, but he makes his case really well.
Yeah. I mean, Attila is I was surprised to find out that Attila was a museum curator. You know, Attila's got a lot going for him that you don't expect when you're hearing about him in the book.
Okay.
You
phased out there. I didn't hear that.
Okay. So I was just saying that earlier in the book, you don't expect Attila to be this intelligent and to be a museum curator. You've got that's a career, man. You know, yeah.
And what does Attila do with his free time? He goes there and imagines what weapons he'd use to kill these annoying ass people.
I love that
museum.
I was wondering actually if that was a real museum. Where you are.
Awesome.
Which one was it? I couldn't remember.
It's the Denver Museum of Nature and Science.
Thank you.
Sean mentions that you'll know what you're in for with Attila by finding out whether or not he's a guy who was named Attila, mm-hmm. or whether he picked the name Attila.
Yeah. Yeah.
You never give us that answer.
No.
Are you gonna, are we gonna ever have that answer?
I don't know.
Well, that's so mean, dude. That's such a mean response. And my heart hurts. I'm going to say that he picked it.
No, we can get away with that. Cause years ago I did a Hellboy novel. And so I was put in touch with, got in touch with Mike Mignola, the creator, on a number of things. And so there were things that I was wondering about Hellboy, like how fast does he run? Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. What's the caliber of the gun that he carries and all that?
Oh, 1,000.
Yeah, he doesn't. Mike doesn't know. Mike was wonderful to interface with whenever I needed any feedback on that. But it's like, how fast is he on? I don't know. Fast as a horse. So
that's awesome, though. I mean,
a lot of times we don't know these things it's a thing. Yeah, you can wonder about, and it's ultimately irrelevant.
Mm-hmm. It really is. You know, I'm asking it to be a shithead, but like our other question from Burgers that I'm gonna ask, it is also Attila seems to be the standout favorite.
Just so peculiar compared to the Tanner and Daphne and Sean and even Val live these mundane lives. Attila is the opposite of what I can't get over Attila.
You just want to live like Attila.
Yeah.
Yeah. With axes. Well, because normally you see a guy with the
grenade people, bro.
Right. Maybe you just want to boink.
Slip it in there. Slip it in between three people tied together. That was terrifying, by the way. Yeah. That sequence was terrifying. I had stopped my car for the night and like I pulled into my driveway right when he puts the grenade in. Or was it him or was it Evie? I don't remember.
I think it's one of the others.
Okay, so it's
Evie. Evie. Yeah, I think it's Evie.
It's Evie. Evie is the pronunciation because they pronounced it as Evie in the book. So Evie puts the grenade in and then Attila closes the door. And he closes the door right as I stop the car. And I went, okay, I got to I gotta listen gotta keep to this. Going.
I gotta crank the ignition again.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So our friend Keith Burgers Burgers, also wanted to know.
Wait, did he send this question to you? Like, it was on the separate Twitter. From
it was,
me?
It was on the Twitter, bro.
I think he was taking favorites. He was taking
bro,
favorites.
It was on your Twitter post.
Oh, okay. I didn't.
And Brian was tagged in it, but Brian, you're probably just ignoring all of the conversations that we were having on Twitter.
Oh, you were tagged. I'm not as active on Twitter.
Good for you, Brian. Facebook, honestly, good for you, Brian. Bird app is full of garbage, so I'm really proud of you.
It's full of garbage people. He just wants to know if you named Attila because you're a big fan of the band Attila.
I didn't know there was one.
There you go.
I'm not surprised there is one.
Burgers, I just want to say, there you go. Fuck you, bro. Nobody likes whatever band you're talking about, so you farts, dude.
I kind of reject, with all diplomacy here, the premise entirely because it in a way betrays a lack of understanding mm-hmm. about the process because mm-hmm. I use the name Attila because that's his name.
Yeah, it just came to you.
It's like they tell you these things about themselves. And so it's not like it was a deliberate choice. Mm-hmm. It was just, well, this is who he is. This is his name.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay, so real quick, I'm going to fire through a couple questions for you that were asked on the Twitter the other day, and I call it the Twitter because I can. I want you to, right off the top of your head, just answer these questions. They are fun questions. They're not going to be serious. Brian, do you have a big brother?
I do not. I was an only child that absorbed the twin in the womb.
Do you still have teeth? Do you have teeth in your stomach?
Yeah. Yeah, I had one extrude from my palm the other day.
Brian, are you a cheese guy or a crackers guy?
Well, cheese, Brian.
It's you don't have to choose. So.
Okay, next question.
I want to add to that question though.
Okay, well, I'm firing through. Go ahead. I'm asking you.
Ritz or water crackers? Though, if you were to pick a cracker, Brian, Ritz or water?
Saltines?
No, water crackers.
What the hell is a water cracker?
Oh, come on. They're great.
No, I know what they are.
Yeah, see, Brian knows.
No, vegetable crackers.
Yeah.
Sorry, all you authors just blending together on the fucking dumbass. They're like, oh, water crackers. I think you made it up, and it's like you're using secret author eye language to tell each other.
Do you like space crackers? I don't know. I mean, I don't know what I'm gonna ask, Bob. I don't know. I like water. I'm a water crackers fan.
You're gonna have to bring water crackers over.
I will. You'll hate them. You'll think they're garbage. So
throw them right in your face. You will. And then pull my axe.
It's like a
off
tiny thin crust pizza without anything on it.
Yes, absolutely. It's like dry. It's like dry naan, but yeah, it's dude. Like that big. It's almost like what? It's almost like Jesus wafers.
Wait. Okay. Wait. Is it like the ones that have like everything seasoning that you would get at the old restaurant that we used to go to that will not be mentioned because people at that one theater go to it?
Yes. 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 Yes.
And they put it in their soup like a tomato bisque.
Yes.
Cool. Okay. Got it.
I prefer we call it bisque, please.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Hey, Brian. Another question. I have new neighbors that are very loud on their back deck all the time. Loud, so loud that it sounds like they're on my deck, and they are way too loud. Is it rude for me to ask them to shut the fuck up?
Well, I think you have to. It's WWAD. What would Attila do?
Attila would lock them in a hole and put grenades.
Drag them by the hooks of the axe in front of the corpses of their best friend.
Okay, this is the last one I got for you. These are very important questions. The world, specifically me, wants to know. Brian, have you tried The Rock's new energy drink, Zoa Energy? It's very fruity and refreshing. So I'm just curious.
Yeah, it's sort of like the band Attila. I didn't know that existed.
it's actually brand new. Like, literally was started being available like a week ago or something.
Oh, okay.
But no, thank you for putting up with my dumb questions.
They were all
my stupid Twitter jokes that everybody else ignored because I'm insufferable and everyone hates me.
Wanted to ask you in a few minutes, Brian, about obviously anything you have coming out, because in the end, us asking you to be part of the podcast is meant to be a chance to get people to check out some of the other stuff. And I know for a fact that what you have coming out, I'm going to be listening to it / reading it. I am a Brian Hodge fan now, and I'm saying that with all honest to goodness truth. We talked earlier about Pet Sematary, and I was just talking to a few people recently about how there are images and thoughts in that book that I can will to mind. And it's been seventh grade. It's been 27 years since I've read it. I'm so old. I will always remember Star Wars shoes in the middle of the street. And always, until the day that I perish, I will always remember Lewis throwing up a glut of beer when he drinks too much, talking about what he's done. I will always, Brian, remember the eyeball ooze, and I will always remember the fragments of bone inside of someone's flaying flesh as they are disintegrated from within. These are images and thoughts and these amazingly powerful descriptions that you, without fail, produced not just in this story, but also in the Nightmare on Elm Street story that we had read. Bob and I had talked specifically about just how powerful your imagery was. And I'm not much of a horror reader, but now I know why people read horror.
when it works out like that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's like the thing you hear every now and then. I don't read horror, but I like what you do.
Yeah. Well, and that is, you know, horror to me, I'm oftentimes horrified by things that seem like they could actually occur as opposed to the supernatural. And I think that's what about cosmic horror is a little terrifying to me, is that it is so far beyond the comprehension of our knowledge and reality now that it very well could fucking be the case. Yeah, thanks for terrifying the shit out of me, Brian. I really appreciate it.
Cool. My work here is done.
I also, you know, you talking about those images that will stick with you for a long time, if not forever. You mentioned the eyeballs thing. What's funny about that is the aspect of that I will always remember is not necessarily the fact that it happened. It's the conversation, or it's what Daphne says about Tanner and driving him back home, because all he wants to do is get back home at the end of the book. And she says, long after I wiped his eyeballs off of his cheeks, you know, and like that thought of, to me, it's strange that there's a tenderness to it, mm-hmm. in how she treats Tanner at the end, trying to get him home and caring for him in these last moments where he's falling apart. And it shows this level of love that, like, that's a thing that you will do for another human being whom you love so deeply and care so much about that, you know, there's not a second thought to it. She just does it because that's what's to be done at the moment, because her brother needs that. And that stood out to me more than any of the actual horrific things, was some of the love that these characters had for each other.
That's what I wanted to really. Because they have these two different timelines. Hers is a longer, but they alternate back and forth. Hers is a longer timeline, but then they end up meshing at the very end. Their timelines come together. And so that's really what I wanted. Again, it goes back to these choices that you make, of rising to the challenge in the moment, really, with just this tenderness that the person needs and deserves. And honestly, I think women are better at that than men, as far as, you know, swallowing their gorge of revulsion, if there's something that's needed beyond that, you know. I think women are generally better at that.
I always say moms are tough as shit.
Yeah.
So it's like that, it grows right along with it. Brian, I don't have too many more questions to ask. My honest hope is that people take our minuscule quarantine book club suggestion and read this fucking book.
Well, they'll have to come to me. For...
it is.
It's like Mad Max in the Road War.
You
want to read this book? You come to me.
That's awesome. That's
You're a word burger now, Brian. You're a word burger.
I don't even know what the fuck a word burger is.
Word burger were the guys in the world of Mad Max that actually had books written on them.
Oh, wow.
I've not heard of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that is directly derived from Fahrenheit 451 as well. But yeah, the history men are word burgers.
Oh, nice. Interesting. that one's gone past me. No, I had to pull the books that I had from the void here and skidding into oblivion, the collection it split off from. I had to, a little over a year ago, I had to pull my rights back from the publisher.
Wow. Gotcha. Gotcha.
It was a situation where at the time that I'd gone into to working with them, they had, and they were a very well-regarded publisher, but there were a number of things that ended up, I guess that they managed to keep secret for a long, hidden for a long time. And then all of a sudden, a little over a year, when was it, the end of 2019? So that started to blow up.
Yeah.
And so I ended up, there was a number of people that weren't getting paid, pretty well documented financial malfeasance on their part, some things that could be considered human resources violations.
Wow.
That it would just painted a really ugly picture. And so people fled. So because it was the right thing to do in my case, because don't want to, but also at the same time, both books had drawn the collection and the novel here had drawn in film and TV interest. And I didn't know if they were going to stay in business or not. So the last thing I wanted was for either of these things to get caught up as assets in a bankruptcy situation. Yeah. So I got my rights back.
Good on you, Brian. That's awesome.
And that saved the media deals. But it also meant that they immediately went off the market, except for this audiobook that I didn't know about. So,
wow. Was tonight the first time you're hearing about it?
No. I knew about it. Okay. And I arranged. I was supposedly had gotten all rights back. That was how it was presented to me. But I was never told about the audiobook. So I got with the found out the details of the contract and decided, well, it really wasn't worth pursuing with the guy who issued the publisher that put out the audiobook, because he did everything in good faith.
Is there a way then, Brian, that people who want to read this book can directly support you as the
author? Yeah, that's how it's been working ever since, until they can go back on the market. I'm kind of waiting until to see what happens with the potential series,
sure,
before broaching that subject again. So yeah, but a few months ago there was a Reddit thread on the book that blew up and sent a lot of people to me. So if people just write to me at brian@brianhodge.net, they can, yeah, well, I'm just getting ready to hold to show you the book there, that those are gone. I bought up all this stock and dealt directly with people on those, but those were gone about a year over a year ago. So yeah, I deal direct with people on the eBooks, and they get to name their own price. And I've found that the people are really, at least very fair, sometimes extremely generous.
That's awesome.
Awesome.
So that, yeah, so really awesome. Just ask me at by email, brian@brianhodge.net, and that's how it has to be done now.
And we'll make sure to put that in the notes of this show as well, so that way people can do so, because this is a book, it's a book that deserves to be read.
Yeah. Are you getting, going back to, I don't mean to keep harping back the audiobook. Are you getting a kickback from the audiobook sales?
I'm getting the royalties.
Okay, great. I was going to say, because if that's the case, I'd be like, no, don't buy that audio.
Ooh, I got a hit. Yeah.
No, I
wouldn't want to. No, the guy's been very understanding about that. And I've been very understanding of his position, and I didn't want to. And when you do an audiobook, there's a certain amount of sunk costs up front before that ever goes on the market. And, you know, you've got talent to pay and all that. So I get the royalties from that now, and not the publisher that didn't tell me it existed.
Great, man. I'm glad. I'm super glad, because you deserve it. You deserve every cent. You deserve this thing to go, this option to go
through,
you know, go sure. through, get that series. Cause I would love to watch this.
Me
too. To see, you
I
know,
would too, yeah.
talented actors bring your vision, of this fantastic and horrifying world to life.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Brian, we're hitting about an hour and a half. So this is usually where we ended up. Is there anything that you'd like to promote or call attention to, or just sort of anything that you want to talk about or toss out there to anybody who is listening?
Not really. These are the most recent things, that in the collection, because, you know, like I mentioned of the family loss 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. Well, then I became the, executor of their estate. That was my life for the next year and beyond. And so I had a lot of stuff in the pipeline, but I'm in a place now where the pipeline kind of emptied. And so there's not really much of anything new coming out.
Do you have works that you're, that are in, that you're functionally writing right now?
Well, I did a deal for the I guess it'd be my sixth story collection. So that will be, did that with Cemetery Dance Publications. And so that will be out sometime, but I'm still sorting out whether I'm even a writer anymore.
Understood though. I mean, there is, yeah. I mean, that's not invalid. I mean, that's life takes you places, and sometimes you just go where life is carrying you.
Well, yeah, it's the way I've kind of lost interest, certainly in horror. If I continue as a writer, it would be more probably with fantasy. But, you know, the way I've phrased it is that when you go through an ordeal, and I think that year plus qualifies as an ordeal by
absolutely
any definition. I read a book earlier this year that referred to events like that, life-changing events, as lifequakes. I really liked the term, but I kind of came out of that with new interests, and other things dropped away. And my earliest touchstone for this as to how normal this is, it was reading Neil Peart's book, Ghost Rider. About his recovery and after he lost his family,
yeah,
when he thought he was going to not only leave the band, and there is no Rush without Neil Peart,
right.
So that and retire from drumming altogether. Well, he didn't, but he did find his way back. But I always found it really fascinating that he felt compelled to reinvent his approach to drumming. He broke it down and rebuilt himself as a drummer.
Whatever.
This is normal. I'm kind of in the middle of sorting through that now. Do I want to do this, sir?
Whatever lifequakes continue to occur, or hopefully do not from this point forward. Brian, you absolutely have fans in us. So if there's anything that you create and that you're like, guys, buy my damn book and talk about it. We're all about it, because twice now we've read works by you that have allowed us to engage intellectually with what is happening in these stories. And they've been an absolute pleasure. So thank you for that.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you for noticing.
So, Brian, I have one more question to ask, and it's a question we have to ask every guest.
Oh, shit. Cool. We didn't ask at the beginning. Oh, man. We screwed up, Brian. I'm sorry. We screwed up. We screwed up big time to all our three fans out there.
Maybe you can re-edit it.
Yeah. No, it's okay. No, because
we don't edit.
Yeah, there's no editing. Brian, can you confirm for us that you are not a men's rights activist?
Yeah, I suppose I could confirm that.
Okay, we don't have to delete this whole episode.
Yeah, I've never jumped on that bandwagon. So.
Thank God. It's probably like, what the fuck? They asked me that question. There is no, it's literally a question we ask everybody.
Yeah, I've heard you mention that. God.
Yeah, yes. I know you're dumb.
Brain Hodge is not a men's rights activist.
Don't worry, you'll get your certificate in the mail. I don't know your address. I'll send you an email copy of it.
Well, Brian, it has been an awesome pleasure. Thank you so much. Bob, do you have anything that you want to finish up with?
Yeah, you know, as usual, you can do the good old stuff. Like, you can find us on our website at www.thequarantinebookclub.com. Don't forget to add the, because then they'll have, like, you know, you'll end up at the other website that is the different Quarantine Book Club, where they have actual authors, like Brian, paid to talk to you. And we don't have the money to do that. You can follow us on Instagram at the Quarantine Book Club podcast.
Brian's like, let me write that down really quick.
Exactly. That was not my understanding at all. Yeah.
Our Facebook group is. Oh wait, did you think we were gonna pay you? Because I don't.
No, God.
I don't have any money. I'm trying to buy a house right now, bro.
I spent it all on liquid death, Brian.
our Facebook group is at the Quarantine Book Club. You can find Rants on Twitter at Violence Obscene. You can find me at Bob Design. You can find the Quarantine Book Club on Twitter at the QBC Podcast. Brian, what's your Twitter?
It's B. Hodge author.
Cool. Definitely not B. Hodges.
No, singular.
Not Brian Hodges. I think that's it. You know, hey, you can find us. Clearly, you're listening to the podcast, so you can find us wherever you get great podcasts, like Apple, Stitcher, Spotify, all those other awesome places. I think that's it for me.
And also make sure to check out brianhodge.net as well for any information, or contact Brian Hodge for his books, and all the essential links are right up there.
That website's really out of date. That was fell by the wayside 3 years ago, and I haven't gotten back to it. So
that's okay. Yeah. That's what happens.
The email address is still good there.
There you
Perfect.
Go.
That's all you need then.
Well, we are all good. I'm Rance.
I'm Bob, and this has been
the Quarantine Book Club.
Bye, burgers.
Brian, thanks again. Everybody, stay safe, be kind to each other, and do the work. We'll see you next time.